The 12 Maidens. A serial for radio in 6 parts by Stuart Farrer. Part 3. The New Witch. Peter Brent and Margaret Govan are working on Biodar, a new form of radar which can pick up sentient life. When Maiden Tor, a nearby hilltop crowned with a circle of stones known as the 12 Maidens, shows a complete blank on their screens, they explore it and find evidence of black magic rites. They consult their colleague, Dr. Carl Ewing, who calls in 2 white witch friends, Bridget Williams and her brother, Donald. Peter, Margaret, and Carl are present at a ritual in the Williams cottage, where Margaret has a strange experience.
Margaret, have you ever read or heard anything about astral projection?
I don't even know what it means.
Well, you do now, my dear. You've just described it. Donald, she's a natural. She'd be safer in, and we need her anyway. There's power there, and we want all we can get to cope with that lot on Maiden Tor. What do you say?
I say yes.
Yes to what? Margaret, you know there's a battle on down here. You've asked our help in it, and you yourself are right in the middle of it. You're more vulnerable than the others because you are a natural. So, for your own protection and to help us, we want to initiate you. We want to make you a witch.
Oh, no. Maggie, you can't.
Why can't you, Peter?
Look, I don't want to offend you or anything. Maybe all this this ritual means something to you. Maybe prancing around naked in a magic circle makes you feel more psychic. I wouldn't know.
Do we really prance, Bridget?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. In fact, I'll grant you, it's beautiful in an eerie sort of way. But whether it actually achieves anything, I wouldn't know that either. I'm a scientist, a laboratory scientist, not a magic circle one. And so's Margaret. She's a damn good biologist, and she's at home with facts. You're trying to pitchfork her into something she doesn't understand any more than I do.
Are you sure she doesn't?
Yes, I am sure. She's never been in a magic circle before. And you know, from the sort of questions we were asking, that we're both clueless about it. Besides, it's mentally dangerous to plunge yourself into a thing that can play tricks on you, like that carry-on of Margaret's just now, unless you know exactly what you're up to.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's why we want her initiated, so that she can learn as fast as possible.
But why should she?
Look, Peter, you're talking about me as if I wasn't here. It was me they asked.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Maggie, but...
And I know what Bridget means.
Well, how can you?
About being a natural.
I know what she means, too. Peter, maybe Margaret hasn't been in a magic circle before. I have, several times. Even though I'm not a witch, just a sympathetic observer. And on top of that, I have quite a lot of theoretical knowledge about the subject, which Margaret hasn't. And yet I could tell that during this ritual, she had more instinctive understanding of what was going on than I.
Well, sir, she's sensitive, sir. She's got intuition. Fine, I knew that already. So what are you saying? That she ought to let herself be initiated?
Oh, well, that's entirely up to her.
Thank you, Carl. I'm glad somebody recognizes it.
But she might be safer if she did.
Why, for God's sake?
Well, you're a scientist, Peter. You understand resonance.
Yes.
Now transfer that principle to the psychic field. Margaret was resonant to what Donald and Bridget were doing, to the forces they were tapping.
Carl,
yes. So she's just as likely to be resonant to some other things that are going on at the moment.
Mm. You mean the black magic lot? The ones who buried those images of Tom McKinnon and Phil Jessop up on Maiden Tor? Whoever they are.
Whoever they are. And that's why we invited Donald and Bridget down here, remember? To fight them with their own weapons, to counter black magic with white magic. And those others will be fighting back, looking for the weak spots. Somebody who is sensitive, resonant, but without psychic armor, could be just what they're after.
Morning to you.
Morning.
Morning, Joe.
2 pints of keg, please, Joe.
2 pints of keg.
Yeah. Joe, yeah? You know this part of the world pretty well.
I should do by now.
What do you know about Maiden Tor?
You can see 3 counties from it, folks say, but I reckon it'd have to be a damn clear day. I've never made it more than 2. Used to climb up there a lot when I was a young'un. Don't get much time these days. They do say them big stones, the 12 maidens, have all got their own names.
Really? What are they?
Well, that they never say because they don't know. It's always someone else that told them, and seems they didn't know either. Just one of those yarns everyone passes on like, but no one knows the truth of it.
And the flat one, the sort of altar in the middle of the circle.
Funny you should call it that, because that's what everyone else does. The altar.
Hmm. Well, cheers, George.
Oh, cheers, Peter.
Morning.
Morning.
Usual?
Morning.
Yes, please, Joe. Oh,
I'll make mine morning. A half, though, Reuben. I've got a long drive this afternoon.
As you say, Bill.
Yeah, mind you, I reckon the 12 maidens must have been there a good few hundred years, so how anyone could know what their names were then beats me.
More than a few hundred years, Joe?
The 12 maidens? More like 4,000. They're Neolithic.
Oh? Have you any gen on them, Mr. Fairfax?
Not especially, but comparing them with Stonehenge and Avery, you can date them near enough.
What do they do there? The people who put them up, I mean.
Some experts say it was a sort of observatory.
What the hell would a lot of savages want with an observatory?
Who says they're savages?
You mean to fix the seasons and so on?
Yeah, there was an archaeologist chap came down from Oxford a few years back and did a lot of measurements and calculations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got to know him because he was always wondering about my farm with theodolites and things. I'm dead south from Maiden Tor.
Oh.
Anyway, he reckoned the 12 maidens were pretty exactly placed in relation to the zodiac as it was then. He was going to send me a copy of his paper on it, but he forgot.
Mr. Shanklin, you mean, Reuben?
That's right.
He died a few weeks after he stayed here.
What?
I know, because I found a book he'd left behind, so I rang up and they told me.
Oh, he never knew that. Poor chap.
Queer hobbies some people have. Going round measuring old stones with a ruddy theodolite. You'd think they'd find something better to do with their time.
On bearing 252...
On range 3160.
Angle plus 3 degrees and searching.
There you see. That should be Maiden Tor. Not so much as a flicker of a break on any of our tubes.
There must be some explanation. Freak local conditions.
Well, of what kind? The compass goes a bit erratic up there. Could be iron in the rock, but not enough to account for that. No Geiger reaction, just normal level.
And I've done a check on the small life. Same sort of population as on Little Tor on 219, which gives a good, healthy mush.
Well, I don't know. I think we better try a more detailed magnetic survey for a start. And radio.
The walkie-talkie's unaffected, sir. We've tried.
Well, keep mulling it over, all of you, and I will too. One of us has to come up with a brainwave. I must get on.
How are you feeling now, Phil?
Oh, fine, thanks, Margaret. Migraine's quite gone. Yet another unexplained phenomenon.
Unexplained. I wonder.
Hello there.
Hello, Bridget.
What are you doing up here?
Having a think about witches.
Black or white?
Both.
So now you've conjured me up.
Why, are you both? I thought you were supposed to be white.
Show me anyone who isn't some shade of grey. Pure white couldn't still be human.
And pure black?
Nor that, either. I'll tell you one thing, though. Whatever's working up here isn't far off it. And compared with them, we're whiter than white.
Doesn't it scare you, then, coming up here?
Yes.
So why come?
If you're going to run away from things, you don't become a witch at all. You let sleeping dogs lie.
You're asking Margaret to wake them up.
Oh, they were sniffing at her before we even came. We want to help her to cope with them.
These metaphors.
You're in love with her, aren't you?
Me? Well, I'm fond of her, yes. We work together. We live in the same house, talk the same language. She's pretty. Well, we've had a bit of a thing going, that's all. No strings.
I see. Well, then, you can't object to her becoming a witch, can you?
Maggie can do what she likes. She's of age.
She is going to. Donald is initiating her tonight. You want to come?
Is Carl going?
Yes.
Then he can look after her. I don't think I want to see it. What's funny?
You are. You've got a hell of a lot to learn about yourself. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
O thou who standest on the threshold between the pleasant world of men and the terrible domain of the dread lords of the outer spaces, hast thou the courage to make the essay? For I say verily it were better to rush on my blade and perish than to make the attempt with fear in thy heart.
I have two perfect words, perfect love and perfect trust.
All who have are doubly welcome. I give you a third to pass you through the dread door. Take heed, ye lords of the East, that Margaret is properly prepared to be made a priestess and a witch. Now we're taking your measure in thread from the crown of your head to the soles of your feet. In the old days when your measure was taken, hair and nail clippings would have been taken at the same time from your body. The coven would have kept the measure and the clippings. And if you'd tried to leave the coven, they would have worked on them to bring you back, and you would never have escaped. But because you came into our circle with two perfect words, perfect love and perfect trust, we give you your measure back and charge you to wear it on your left arm. Before thou art sworn, art thou willing to pass the ordeal and be purified? Properly prepared within the circle such as I am now in.
Properly prepared within the circle such as I am now in.
All this I swear by my hopes of a future life.
All this I swear by my hopes of a future life.
Mindful that my measure has been taken.
Mindful that my measure has been taken.
And may my weapons turn against me if I break this my solemn oath.
And may my weapons turn against me if I break this my solemn oath.
Unbind her and remove the blindfold. I consecrate thee with oil. I consecrate thee with wine. I consecrate thee with my lips, priestess and witch. And that's it, my dear. You're now a witch. Blessed be.
Welcome in, and blessed be.
And if a non-witch may say it too, blessed be, Margaret.
Blessed be. Thank you.
Oh, there's a bit more yet. The presenting of the tools. But we always break off after the anointing for a minute or two to welcome a new witch. Go on. Sit down for a bit.
Thank you.
How do you feel?
Strange. I feel very happy and sort of strong. But I feel as though a lot of people or things were watching outside the circle. Some of them friendly, but some not.
Psychological reaction, probably, because you're not used to being naked.
Oh, good heavens, no. That's funny, too. I think if I had clothes on inside the circle now, I'd feel dirty.
You learn fast.
But those presences outside, they're interested in what's happening to me.
You bet they are.
And they're still there.
Don't be afraid, Margaret. The hostile ones can't enter the circle. That's what it's for, to protect us and to concentrate the power we raise.
What makes it and maintains it?
Our will. Donald's and mine and yours, even Carl's, although he's not a witch. Because his will is friendly, we can tap it.
But you'll be banishing the circle soon. What happens then? Those enemies, can't they get at us?
Oh, they'll have a damn good try. But that's what this battle's all about. You've been in the front line from the start. The difference now is that you're aware of them, that's all.
And I'll have to fight.
I'm afraid you will. But that's why we initiated you, to give you weapons. When you feel the enemy attacking, resist with all your willpower and know that we're behind you. Here, take this.
Oh, it's beautiful. What is it?
It's what they call a linked talisman. Bridget and I have consecrated it and put something of ourselves into it. Wear it round your neck. And when you need our support, hold it tight in your right hand and join our will to yours. We'll be there.
Will you know about it? At the time, I mean?
Oh, we may and we may not. If we're quiet at the time and not bombarded with other impressions, we'll be conscious of it. But we'll surely be aware of it on one level or another. Do you see the difference?
I suppose it depends what level your consciousness is working on at the time.
Good girl. And you'll get our help in either case. It's an ankh. The Egyptian looped across a life. And it's made of iron, the metal of Mars.
which seemed appropriate for this purpose. Now, back to work. Up you get.
I now present you with the working tools of a witch. First, the magic sword. With this, as with you, Thame, thou canst form all magic circles, dominate, subdue, and punish all rebellious spirits and demons.
What do you see?
I see a sword.
Who carries the sword?
I cannot see. She is naked but veiled. The color of pearl.
And what is pearl?
The moon and Margarita. Margaret.
Margaret holds the sword.
Margaret holds the sword.
You have a sword also. A sword of fire. It is in your hand. Feel it.
I feel it.
Break her sword with yours.
I
command you.
Her sword is strong.
Yours is stronger. Feel its strength and then break hers. I command you. Back, all of you. Let her lie. Do not touch her. Take hands. Circle, we descends.
Echo, echo, Hazarak. Echo, echo, Samilak. Echo, echo, Hecate. Echo, echo, Baphomet. Echo, echo, Hazarak.
Faster, faster!
Echo, echo, Hazarak. Echo, echo, Samilak. Echo, echo, Hecate. Echo, echo, Baphomet.
Good morning, Miss Platt.
May I come in?
Ah, of course. Sit down. Are you all right?
Oh, just a headache. I slept badly for some reason.
Can I get you some aspirin?
Oh, I've taken quite enough already, thanks. Dr. Ewing, off the record, I've come to apologize.
Why? What have you done?
Not for myself, exactly. For the security department.
Ah.
I'm afraid my boss was a little tactless with you the other night.
Yes, well, tact isn't Rex Andrew's strong point, I'll admit.
Security isn't an easy job at the best of times. But it is a job, and we have to do it.
I suppose so. Once you've chosen
it. For God's sake, Carl, we were colleagues once. Do you have to be so starchy? I'm trying to make peace.
Forgive me, Susan. I have been a bit humorless. Disappointment, I suppose. You were damn good psychical researcher. Some of your work on poltergeists was a model of its kind, and then suddenly you turn up in this stupid cloak and dagger role, which I'm not convinced is necessary or wise for the Biodar project anyway. And I don't worry, I'm keeping to the rules. I just resent them, and I resent you being wasted on their enforcement. Hence the bad temper.
Let's agree to differ, then. You're the last person I want to quarrel with.
Huh? Hatchet buried. And now, I suppose, you vixen, having softened me up, you're here on your department's sordid business.
I'm afraid so.
About what?
Look, Carl, I know Rex was clumsy, the way he pumped you about those visitors of yours, but that's part of our brief. To check up on contacts of all the staff here. The Ministry takes Biodar very seriously, you know.
Oh, so do I. But to put your mind at rest, what I said to Andrews was true, even if I expressed it a little sarcastically. Donald and Bridget Williams are not communists, anarchists, militant pacifists, or anything that's a threat to the Biodar project. I've known them for many years. But we haven't had a real get-together for months, and I was a little starved of outside company, so I invited them down here. They're my guests, and I am paying the rent of the cottage, as you doubtless also know.
We do.
Mm.
I'm sure you're quite right about them, but we do have to go through the drill. I just wanted you to understand that. And try not to be offended if you realize we're poking around.
I will try, because although the activity is distasteful, you personally, I do not find so, even if you are a renegade. So with that left-handed compliment tucked under your belt, run away and nurse your headache so that I can get on with my work.
You're not so bad yourself. Bye now.
Bye. Carl Ewing, you've just been conned and liked it.
Oh, really, Andrews, the total staff here is only 23, including army and civilians. The guard commanders know everybody. In fact, everybody knows everybody, mostly by their Christian names. What the hell do we want passes for?
The principle of the thing. Look, suppose the project were to expand and the numbers increase. Or suppose some of the army are called away and you get replacements who don't know everybody. The system ought to be working before that happens.
Oh, right, you better organize the damn thing.
Thank you, Professor.
Oh, I'm sorry to be scratchy. Only having been ill, I've got a lot to catch up with. Real work, I mean, on Biodar, which is what I'm here for. Only all this paper keeps getting in the way.
I know. Still, you seem to have technical staff who don't need spoon-feeding and supervising all the time.
Yes, thank God. They're a bright bunch, all of them. That young REME sergeant, for instance, George Blake, quite off his own bat, he's produced an idea which has increased the Biodar range from 1,500 to 6,000 meters. And it works. You ought to have pips, not stripes.
Yes, so I gathered.
Funny thing, though. The increased range has brought a puzzle to light. You know Maiden Tor?
That big hill with the dolmens on it?
Yes. Well, it's a blank on our screens. Even when we send people up there, Biodar can't track them, and so far we've found no explanation.
Could it be some kind of deliberate jamming?
Oh, my dear chap, I know it's your job, but don't go seeing saboteurs under the bed. Believe me, that kind of localized jamming would be a complete technical impossibility. And anyhow, what the hell would anyone gain by it? Sabotage, really.
Look, I know, Peter, you think it's nonsense, but I'm damn sure there's some connection between this black magic caper at the top where you found the images and the Biodar blackout that surrounds it. But why?
I didn't say it was nonsense. All I said was that if they produced it, they did it scientifically, not supernaturally. Oh, God knows how.
Go on, George.
But why should they want to?
To hide what they're doing.
That's just my point. The blackout hasn't hidden it. It's drawn attention to it. If there'd been no blackout, you'd have never found those images. Professor Jessup would probably still be as sick as a dog, and Dr. Ewing would never have invited his friends down.
And Margaret wouldn't be a witch.
But Peter, he's right. They did draw attention to themselves. Why?
He is right, come to think of it. Well, I think that proves my point. They, whoever they are, didn't arrange the blackout. Something else did.
Or what?
Or they overdid it.
I don't get you.
Look. We know they're hostile to the Biodar project. Those wax images prove it. And you can call it coincidence if you like, but it damn well worked. Tom McKinnon's dead and Professor Jessup was ill till the image was dealt with. Why should they be hostile to it? Assuming they knew what it was. Why should they try to stop it?
Well, perhaps they knew or guessed that Biodar might show up what they were doing in some way. I mean, not just show there was a bunch of people up there, which we wouldn't have thought twice about, but some strange effect on the screen which would make us go and look.
Yes, but even if that were true, how would they know? After all, we don't. We've never tried to pick up magic.
No, but you knew Tom McKinnon. Half the Biodar stuff was still in his head when he died. Well, maybe he dropped a hint without meaning to. You know how he talked. And somebody else picked it up and understood it while we didn't.
All right, accept that for a moment. So what?
So these people are scared. They try to protect themselves. They put up some kind of screen, whether psychically or otherwise, which they hope will camouflage them. But they don't know their own strength. They overdo it so much that they produce not just a camouflage, but a complete blackout. And my guess is that they don't know they've overdone it. And they don't know they've drawn attention to themselves.
George, I always said you were a genius. It makes sense.
Maggie, I thought you said you could feel that they knew your lot were after them.
Oh, yes, they know. They could hardly miss it. But they don't know the clues they've been feeding into this machine.
Are you seriously suggesting that magic can be spotted on the Biodar screen?
There's one way to find out, isn't there? Peter, is your car outside? Can I take it?
Oh, sure, but don't be...
You two stay here and line up the Biodar on Donald and Bridget's cottage. I'll ring you when we're ready. All I'll say is 5 minutes or something, right?
Right.
Everything's ready to start.
Good. Hold on a sec. Extension 7, please. Peter, about 2 minutes.
but it might take longer to build up. Bye.
Right. Now, as soon as the circle is cast, all the power we can raise. I conjure thee, O circle of power, that thou beest a meeting place of love and joy and truth, a boundary between the world of men and the realms of the mighty ones, a guardian and protection that shall preserve and contain the power that we shall raise within thee.
Well, the break's clear enough. Three of them in one room gives a nice healthy blip.
Can't quite separate them, but you can see them moving around by the way the brake pulses.
Yes, and that's all we will see. It's a sheer waste of time.
Is it, though? Peter, look. The brake's growing. Crikey. Three people, and they're given a Bayadar brake that looks like 50.
That was part three of The 12 Maidens by Stuart Farrar. Listen to the next episode of David H. Godfrey's production of The 12 Maidens, Black Midsummer.